Why don't we get started?
Okay, that sounds good. I'd like to go ahead and get started. So side conversations will probably have to start coming to an end. I could say it a little more slowly. All right, let's get started. Go ahead, Paige. Thanks.
Okay. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm stalling for a little bit of PowerPoint projector warm-up time. This is a 60th Avenue station community project. I'm going to let Matt pick up the ball from here and start talking to the commission while this PowerPoint warms up.
Okay. I'm Matt Wickstrom. I'm with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
And I'm Tom Armstrong with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
We've got Stuart Wynn here from the Portland Transportation. Back to the transportation questions. We'll just go ahead and get started, and when boots up, we'll start seeing things.
Okay. Yeah. I hope you don't mind. We have kind of a full schedule, so.
Absolutely fine with that.
Okay.
So thanks for having us here today. And first, we want to talk about the East Side MAC Station Community Project, which is actually part of the 60th Avenue Station Community Project. East Side MAC is 25 years old now, and what the East Side MAC Station Community Project was an examination of how to make the stations around East Side MAC's better places, particularly looking at why or questioning why development hasn't occurred in the way we would have may have expected. The project explored ways to promote active and attractive and active station communities, pedestrian-friendly access and connections, and transit ridership and sustainability goals. So we studied six stations. We're moving forward with one, and we'll just talk briefly about the overall context. The six stations that we studied were 60th Avenue, 82nd Avenue, Park Row Sumner, 122nd, 148th, and 162nd. There was a variety of public engagement that happened. The project actually began in spring 2008, and we formed a 25-member community working group. We had walking tours, a bilingual survey was mailed to 4,000 residences, addresses. Open houses, we had interactive coffee shop posters, as well as further open houses to discuss the proposals when they were developed. There was also a youth engagement component, and our youth planning program at BPS did particular outreach about the 82nd Avenue station with youth, collected about 120 surveys at the Montebello Community Center and Madison High School. The project was funded through a transportation and growth management grant, which allowed for consultant work. They produced a best practices report, a real estate market overview, existing conditions traffic memos, and then that information, plus what was compiled from the public input, was compiled into a needs, opportunities, and constraints report, and then our further traffic memos following the development of the proposals. The preliminary findings were that for some station areas lacked development potential, also favored examination through further planning efforts. One station in particular couldn't meet the transportation planning rule requirements, and for other stations, they require changes to comprehensive plan map designations in residential areas. For the 60th Avenue station, and in particular why we're moving forward with the 60th Avenue station, we want to honor the work and involvement of done by the residents and businesses and respond to those community aspirations. Determine that the proposal is consistent with the draft Portland plan direction, goals, and objectives. In the 60th Avenue station area, residential property owners can already request a zoning map amendment to achieve higher density, so they're not changing the comprehensive plan map designation for these residential properties. Also, market factors suggest the potential for more urban building types in the station area. And then, hey, there we go. Thanks. And then staff conducted a fresh round of public involvement and notification for the project. Just to orientate you with the station area, the station's actually right here. The light rail line follows the I-84 Banfield Freeway. The station's below grade at the I-84 level. Some landmarks here are Providence Medical Center. We've got Center Commons, which is a transit-oriented development right here at the station. Fred Meyer's over here. Also, one thing to point out is there's some industrial areas zoned employment just north of the station. Those were examined as part of the project, but we aren't including any proposals for those. Norman Dale Park is here. Transportation conditions were and accessibility were key in the discussion. The area is missing sidewalks or has many narrow sidewalks, especially on 60th Avenue. This is a picture of 60th where you have, you know, barely a 3-foot sidewalk, which is the main street leading to the station. There's limited north-south bike access, and then there's substandard streets throughout the station area. Some other transportation conditions are there's dangerous pedestrian crossings. This is in particularly true here at 58th and Gleason, where the I-84 on and off ramps cross right over pedestrian crossings. Here, further up Gleason at about 63rd, we've got 4 lanes of traffic, but no actual marked pedestrian crossing. And then this is a dark but correct portrayal of 60th Avenue leading to the station access up here. It's really just a very lackluster pedestrian experience and difficult too because the lighting at night isn't good and it's difficult for vehicles to see pedestrians. So first to start with the residential areas, those are circled here in pink. And most dwellings in the north of the station area are single dwelling residences on 5,000 square foot lots. They have a different current planning designation and comp plan designation. The comp plan designation was applied back in 1980 in anticipation of the light rail station. And generally, the residential properties north or south of the station have a current zoning of R5 or R2, which is a single dwelling zone or a low density multi-dwelling zone. But with a comp plan designation of R1 or RH, which are medium and high density residential designations. The area south of the station has a mix of dwelling types. There's center commons here, kind of courtyard style apartments here, and also single dwelling residences. And that zoning is essentially similar there. They're zoned with an urban scale comprehensive plan map designation. For these residential areas, the different current zoning and comprehensive plan map designation create uncertainty for residences about the type and intensity of development that could occur near them. There's also been a lot of concerns expressed about the design quality and compatibility of recent development. So the proposal is to change the current residential zoning designations, which are R5 or R2, to match the comprehensive plan designations, either R1 or RH, and then also to add a design overlay. What this does is it removes the zoning map amendment process, which is required to achieve the comprehensive plan map designation. These projects, particularly these two, went through that zoning map amendment process to achieve the higher density, which is why they were able to construct it at higher densities. And the zoning map amendment process also focuses primarily on adequacy of city services. And when there are small-scale projects such as these, typically, it doesn't result in any larger scale transportation or other improvements to city services. We also heard concerns, or we did hear concerns from neighbors about this proposal, that if their home was damaged by fire or destroyed in an earthquake, would they have to rebuild as an apartment or have that higher density? The answer is no. If they rebuild within 5 years, they could rebuild as a single dwelling home, even with the higher density zoning designation. For the commercial streets, we're going to talk about Northeast Gleason from Northeast 53rd to Northeast 61st. There's also a commercial node up here at Northeast Halsey and Northeast 60th Avenue. And for Northeast Gleason, what we've got is a retail uses clustered around the 60th Avenue intersection. Also got non-conforming uses along the street and a real mix of zoning, either R1 or R or CN2, which is a neighborhood commercial 2. In a hodgepodge along the street. For Northeast Halsey and 60th, that area is really a small-scale commercial node. There's a pub, a few pubs, a convenience store, and an auto repair shop. So what we've found is that CN2 zoning effectively limits mixed-use development. This is primarily because it has a 60% building coverage limitation for the property. Retail sales in the station area represent only about 6% of the market area, and this is anecdotally reflected in neighbors' comments about a lack of places to go in the area. And it's important to also point out that Fred Meyer is just outside of that area where the market was studied, so I'm sure if you include that, the 6% goes up quite a bit. Also, we're looking at addressing non-conforming uses. So the proposal is to change the current residential and commercial zoning designations, either the R1 or the CN2, to a storefront commercial designation along Northeast Gleason at 60th and Halsey intersection, and also to add the design overlay. I should also point out that in conversations with BDS, we determined that no specific character statement would be necessary. There's such a range of errors and architectural styles in the area that the D overlay, when applied, would either be through the community design standards or the general community design guidelines. Moving on to Center Commons, and then the select properties which have already had their gone through zone changes in conformance with the comp plan, and the proposal here is to add the design overlay and maybe address some of, hopefully address some of these situations where neighbors are not happy with the quality or compatibility of the design that's occurred. There's also a proposal for two gas stations. That's essentially to leave the zoning at CN2, the neighborhood commercial, but then to apply a comprehensive plan map designation of CS. So in case someone in the future ever wants to not have that gas station business and wanted to redevelop, they can do it at the same intensity and as other properties along Northeast Gleason Street. Both these gas stations are, one is here at Gleason at 58th and one is at 60th at Gleason. For transportation improvements, proposals are streetscape improvements and standards for Northeast 60th Avenue. There's new bike lanes proposed, pedestrian bicycle safety enhancements, connection to the potential future Sullivan's Gulch Trail, and because we have any potential in the future. We also try to categorize things as short-term improvements and long-term improvements. Short-term being things that perhaps PBOT operations could go out and do in the near future. Long-term improvements being those more significant things where funding would need to come available. And this is the slide we're going to just including for Planning Commission about sharing their steps for what they would need to, actions they would need to take. And we have some additional photos if you need any reference, but at this point, we're done with the presentation. Thanks.
Do we have any questions of our presenter?
It's the property to the west of the on-off ramp to the north of Gleason. What that strip between the freeway and Gleason? What is that CS also? Are you rezoning that or?
The backside of that I believe is already R1 and predominantly residential.
Yeah, the north side between
you're
Providence.
You're talking about this
street heading
through here.
Yeah.
It the current zoning is R1, and it's built out as a mix of single family. It's,
right.
It's the 5,000 square foot
right.
lot with single family
right.
homes, and it's the zoning is already R1. It's not the current zoning at. Not consistent with the company.
And under R1, can you do commercial storefront along Gleason?
No.
No? That might be something.
Is that something
you considered? Or?
The properties that front onto Gleason
uh-huh.
will be zoned CS.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Yeah.
I have kind of more of a curiosity question, and perhaps it was just the time when Eastside Max went in, but you're saying how the zoning doesn't support the development of some of the commercial things. And was that just studied when they actually put the line in? Or is it more something like an accidental thing, like the line's gone in and now we realize, oops, we didn't really have the zoning there that we thought was going to promote or this kind of ideal development?
I think it's more the latter, because the zoning, I don't believe we've actually gone back and looked at the zoning since we adopted the 1980 comprehensive plan. At that point, you know, Eastside Max was sort of on the drawing board, and we sort of kind of knew that there would be a station there, and that's why the R1 zoning was put on as a comp plan designation. But in the intervening years, and that was one of the underlying purposes of the whole Eastside Max project, was to go back and look at what's going on in these areas, and which sort of led us to this set of recommendations.
So, and then this maybe takes us totally off topic in some respects, but so as we're looking in the future to putting in new MAX lines and streetcar lines, is that one of the things that are always now being studied in conjunction, is what is the existing zoning of the area, and does it really support the goals of redevelopment where the line's going through, where redevelopment's hoping to be kind of spurred? Or is it still kind of disconnected?
Are we still going to come back 25 minutes?
Yeah, I guess.
You know what would have been good? I think in an ideal world, yes, we would do that. Actually, we'd applied for a CET grant to do that along the Portland-Milwaukee light rail line. And, you know, obviously there's now legal issues with the CET grants. So we're having to find a way to do that station area planning sooner rather than later.
Okay, so here's going to get a little bit more maybe diving into it. So when they're making the findings for justifying the different lines, always part of it is the redevelopment that can happen. But if the redevelopment isn't supported by the existing zoning, how are those findings based on the existing zoning, or are they based on existing zoning conditions?
The findings and the ridership projections are based on existing zoning.
Okay.
To justify or support.
Project
the ridership for the line.
Okay.
And that's true at the regional planning level as well, like when Metro calculates the capacity within the urban growth boundary.
Right.
They're going strictly off of urban, the current designations. And so along these lines, you know, the new green line or wherever, as cities go back through and plan the station areas, there is that increase in capacity, but it's not. Metro doesn't forecast it. We don't forecast it. TriMet doesn't when they're justifying the performance of the line and the planning stage.
That's a good answer. Thanks. I wanted to hear that. Thanks.
I have a question for Tim. Does this mean if we add the design overlay, add a space as a design overlay zone, does that mean, is it type 2 or 3? Okay.
Yeah, I'll hit that. I figured that question would come around. It's outside of Central City, and it's outside of the Gateway Regional Center, so it's a type 2 review. You will see it on an appeal or if staff denies a proposal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other questions? Go ahead.
How does this roll into the 2035 plan? Is this an area of study as part of that, or is this just going to be incorporated into it, what you've done already?
You mean the Portland plan?
Mm-hmm.
It's an area of study. The Portland plan hasn't gotten geographically specific yet, so you know, we just basically fold into just as it does today.
Okay. I think part of it was we had this Eastside Max project sort of was moving before Portland plan really got moving.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an opportunity to sort of get in and get something done very quickly. It helps sort of reduce the amount of areas we're looking at and the dialogue we're having in the southeast, inner southeast area. And because it was largely consistent with the current comprehensive plan and consistent with, you know, the transit-oriented development principles, we felt comfortable that it fits the direction we're heading.
Okay, thanks.
I have another question. And can you talk about the, I guess it's a kind of industrial employment zone, and I know employment zones are important, but what's the reason they were left out?
That's actually a good question. They had originally been left included, but ultimately, when it came down to it, it caused the traffic numbers to fail at 60th and Gleason. So we needed to make a decision of which one of the two to
fit. So the current, why don't you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah.
The numbers failed, so therefore.
Yeah, we were looking at both sort of an upzoning of the industrial area to an EX zone to allow a mixed-use development, and saw that as a pretty attractive area for improving the
makes
station
sense.
Area. But when we did our transportation analysis under the transportation planning rule, making that change as well as this change, the R5 to R1 zone change, generated too many trips in the area that would overload particularly the 60th and Gleason intersection. And so we were left with the question of we could do one but not both, and which one would we do? And in the process of a discussion with the community, we reached a decision that the employment areas were a little bit farther off in terms of development activity and sort of what we would expect, the turnover and redevelopment, and that we were seeing at the time more activity within the neighborhood and these small incremental projects. And so the community consensus really was, let's tackle these, the R5, R1 issue now, and that as part of the Portland plan, when we get a broader look and almost a different set of standards that we have to comply with under the TPR, we have a little bit more flexibility to come back and look at those employment areas.
Because it seems like those are larger aggregate pieces of property that would warrant and support larger development and development in a little more flexible manner, rather than we've seen many cases on appeal of projects next to residential projects, single family, multifamily backing up against single family. And that's probably the most common appeal that we see. And so I'm just wondering if you're setting yourself up for, or we're setting ourselves up for more of those kinds of situations with that versus maybe having the R zones that are currently what they are, leave those and then focus on the industrial areas.
We explored that with the community, and I would say the community was really divided and mixed and not respectful of some of the investment-backed expectations of people that bought in with the idea of the R1 zoning underlying their property. And so they really didn't want to look at sort of reducing that R1 zoning to R25 or an R5 condition that matches the existing development pattern. They preferred to go to this design overlay route because what they were finding is in the zone change in conformance with the comp plan discussions, as Matt alluded to, they want to talk about design of the project. The approval criteria for that step doesn't let you talk about design.
Right.
And so the sort of R1D was a happy compromise that I think most people could
And did they see examples of project types within that zoning that might back up against their property? Or because what normally happens is people buy their let's say their single family house and it backs up to something that's already zoned to allow for a larger project type. And so there's a gap in maybe their own research about what can be built next to them. So it's kind of on them to some degree. But in this case, are people, do they have in their mind what could become a neighbor of theirs?
Yes, and I think it's more the case you're describing right now is there's a lot more surprise element to it. Like I thought I bought a single family home, what's popping up next to me? And what we talked about and what people recognize is sort of the truth in advertising in making the zoning consistent with the comp.
So the people who attended are fully aware of what could be built next to anybody and everybody.
Yes, okay. As part of the R1 zoning. Because they have, as Matt pointed out, there have been, you know, half a dozen projects already in the neighborhood. They've experienced this this situation.
I think the hard areas that we've really run into are, sorry to jump in, but places where you have a split block where you have conditions, and I see a little bit of that here. Unfortunately, your ad design overlay to comprehensive plan kind of covers up a chunk of it, but where one person on one block is essentially stuck in an R5, but they're next door to something that could be multiple stories and essentially cut them off from light and air. And I've seen that kind of on Davis Street. There's this weird little dogleg that, you know, excludes a chunk of properties there. And then, you know, and I think those are the places where you take a block and you split it are the ones where we have the most trouble. You know, I don't see a real problem with Gleason because what's behind it is R1. So you've got, you know, and in some cases R2 going to R1. So you've got some development potential, you know.
Yeah. Well but, like up north, you've got an R1 in the middle of an R5 block.
Exactly. And those, you split know, and those are the situations that are going to give us
Well, we've talked about this a lot of times. Yeah. Is it better to just split it at the street then?
Mm-hmm. I think it's better
to split it at the street.
Yeah. That rather than have your backyard up against something that's so
at least the right-of-way distance between you and the development. Whereas
we've had the discussion where when we've had the room full of people that we wished someone from your group was here so that we could have them hear the passion and the testimony of the evil developer building this five-story building, then they're going to look down in this poor person's backyard. Yeah. And it's a totally different thing if it's across the street.
Right.
No big deal. But it's, you know, and then we feel like we have to force this person to modify what this building they have by right to make it as big as they want. We feel a little bit of pressure to make it fit in better or whatever.
Like even along Interstate, they were trying to put into code a dog leg in these buildings where, you know, your ground floor could go out to the property line, but then you'd have to build this, you know, thing on top of a podium essentially. And, you know, it just felt like a, you know, a design solution meant to address the split zone block where... Yeah.
Just move the line one way or the other.
Kind of the way I feel about
it. It just seems a little easier.
Yeah.
So specifically, you're looking at the Northeast Wasco block.
Well, the one that caught my eye, there's a couple of them. Yeah, I guess the Irving to Haslow along 53rd, and then there's the there's a kind of a mix of them that we're missing because there's a tag over them. But Davis in the 60s.
Yeah, wherever the color changes in the block.
Yeah, let's take a look there and see. You know, again, split zoning a block is okay as long as there's some sort of equivalent up zone that will allow your property on the other side of that apartment building or whatever to go somewhere. But if you were stuck in a single family home and everyone else around you is able to do an apartment building and you can't, then, you know.
So at Wasco, do you see this issue when it's going from R2 abutting R5 where you're, you know, a low-density multi-dwelling zone abutting a single dwelling zone? Or is this more an issue when it's RH or R1 abutting R5?
I think it was the height.
I think any time where you're introducing more height, density is not so much the issue as height.
Yeah.
It's not
a
number of units.
Yeah.
No, it's when people's perception of light and air being cut off, having multiple households looking into your backyard, that kind of stuff just drives people batty.
Yeah.
We'll invite you to the next one.
And I think within the areas that we've recommended to change, that has been an issue with some of the projects, and I would characterize that the neighbors, the single family neighbors next to these projects, that's what they were looking for, the community design standards. Not so much the height and the solar access, but at least the community design standards sort of provide that threshold.
Well, maybe you could talk about the kind of the wiggly piggly, jiggity joggity things and why they kind of do that. Is there a particular owner that said, no, we're not doing that? Or, I mean,
why would there be?
What's the rhyme or reason behind some of these jogs? And
I think there we were just sticking with the current comprehensive plan designations and just bringing the zoning up to be consistent with that current plan. And we didn't dive very deep in terms of how far we push those changes out beyond the current plan designations.
Yep. Well, they look more mannered and studied than they are then, maybe. So I would say take a look at, you know, those blocks and I'd move the line one way or the other wherever you can, just because it creates so much difficulty. Hey, I have a side question. What was the second language that your survey went out in?
Oh, Spanish.
Really? There are a lot of Vietnamese people that live in this neighborhood too. Did they get talked to? Yeah. Or did they come?
There's a Somali community center commons.
I'm curious. I was just curious.
Has center been a pretty good?
The survey went out to all six station areas.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Okay. Comments, questions? This is just a briefing, so. Any wrap-up comments that you guys have beyond the split zone block? And my last comment, I guess I'm kind of glad that TriMet's in the room. Hi, guys. Because I mean, one of the things that I see here that I find interesting about the design of the station and what have you is that station feels so utilitarian in its presence, and it's just like, you know, if you can make it there, it'll get you to the train, and that's all it's there for, kind of. That, you know, it's sort of like, to me, back in 1986, opening a hot dog stand and then being disappointed when people don't come for a three-course meal. You know, it's there was nothing about the design of that station or its placement or the amenities nearby that suggested that you should stick around at all, or that there was anything other than the most utilitarian living going on nearby. And so, I mean, I'm excited to see that you guys are kind of addressing everything around the station. I'm hoping that TriMet's on board and maybe thinking about some ways to make that station feel more friendly if they can. I know it's a tight, you know, right of way with the freeway and what have you, but I know that they've been looking at the freeway stations as sort of what can we do to make these better. But you know, it's just funny that you know, kind of a utility box has sort of spawned this, like, hey, this could be this great neighborhood, and you know, it just doesn't fit.
I think there's been some attempts with the Bybee station, which is proposed along Portland, Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
Below. To make that upper level more, and the lower level as well.
Right.
More welcoming and
right.
friendly and attractive.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great place to get the train if you can make it there a lot.
Yeah. Matt, what's your timing?
We're on the Planning Commission on April 4th. And then we don't have City Council.
Okay. Great. Well, I appreciate you coming in
thank you.
With the briefing. Thanks so much.
Thank you.